This week's conversation with Jane Garrison of Threadnuts, the Painter's Threads Collection, is sponsored by the Embroiderers Guild of America at egausa.org. Each month, EGA offers an expansive roster of creative and educational opportunities for needleworkers around the globe. This month, EGA members can register for a lecture on the Plymouth Tapestry with Donna Curtin. Listeners interested in the topic can also read a blog on the EGA website that details 9 embroidered tapestries from around the world. Use the code FIBERTALK5, that's FIBERTALK and the number 5, all one word, to get a $5 discount on this and any of EGA's virtual lectures, including previous recordings. Learn more at egausa.org. And now our conversation with Jane Garrison. Jane will also be our guest on the FIBERTALK Stitch Hour, August 30 at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, on the FIBERTALK YouTube channel. Mark your calendars so you don't miss our discussion then, when we get to look at threads and see how they're used in various projects. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you are listening to FIBERTALK, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from Threadnuts is Jane Garrison. Jane, welcome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
Yeah, well, okay. I'm just going to be you and Beth, just going to talk about threads for an hour and I'm getting out of the way.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because I am here drooling on all these different threads. Yeah.
So, wonderful. Yeah,
how did you get started with needlework?
My mother had to keep me busy when I was a child. So by the time I was 5, I got a sewing machine as a Christmas gift, and everybody in the family sewed, so did I. And so quilting, then, you know, sewing clothing, it's just been an avocation all my life.
I love
that. You're always...
Yeah. Had to keep you busy. Here's a sewing machine. Get to work.
Exactly. I mean, seriously, I mean, if she was sewing, I wanted to be sewing. And she wasn't about to turn her sewing machine over and not be able to do something. So she gave me one to keep me parallel occupied. It's a good trick.
Yeah. Credit to your mother. Yep.
So I'll say, and then I was going to say, and I was in Bluebirds and learned to knit when I was probably 8 years old. And I took off with the knitting. It was just fun to me. It was just something to keep my fingers busy. And, you know, you could see what you'd done. And it made sense.
When did needlework come in?
It's always been part of it. I mean, okay. it's just one more extension. If you think of all the different types of needle arts, they're essentially the same thing, just done on different groundwork. So embroidery is the same stitches as needlepoint. They're the same stitches as cross stitch. They're just different grounds.
I love it. You don't care. Just give me a needle and thread. Let's go.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And thread's always been a collection. You know, what else? It makes my fingers itch to do something with it. Not because there's something, you know, physically wrong with it, but because I see it and I just can't wait to do something with it. I'm sure, Beth, you feel the same way.
Absolutely. I'm looking at these threads and I'm like, okay, itching fingers, yes, to just start, you know, because the colors are luscious and okay, so you've got all these different textures. How can I use these in different ways? And you have quite a variety on your website.
We do. The lady who dyes these in Germany is, again, a lifelong needle artist, but a graduate of the Royal Academy. And then she started probably 25 or 30 years ago dyeing her own fabrics and her own threads while working full time. And then she was finally able to get this to where it was a business where she could quit working full time and concentrate on the business.
Take us through that whole thing. How do you go from someone who just enjoys needlework, textile arts in general, to developing a wholesale thread business and using as a source a custom dyeing operation in Germany. That's, you know, that's quite a thing to put together.
Well, it wasn't an intentional put together. Okay. It started, I was a shop owner and then went to Bernina of America, recognized me. I went to work for Bernina doing all of their shows, sewing all the time. But Bernina's from Switzerland. And then after a while of being on the road all the time, YLI, who was a manufacturer here in Rock Hill, South Carolina, approached me about coming to work for them. And when I did, the lady in Germany was one of our customers. Mm. I met her. She and her husband came here 2 or 3 years, and we worked together at several needlework shows. And the thread just intrigued me. So YLI distributed it for a few years, and when I decided it was time to get off the road and get spend some more time with family and that sort of thing, I approached the owner of YLI about buying out the inventory that he had on stock. And he was a manufacturer. He didn't understand the product, and he was delighted to get rid of it. So that's how I met her and how we got started. And it has just, my store was a needlework store and a sewing store. And in small town South Carolina, you do everything. So I've always been a real generalist.
Now, there's very little online about you, so our research was kind of limited. So you started a store from scratch, or did you buy it from someone?
No, I started from scratch during the cross-stitch era. My daughter came in from school one day and said, "Mom, you need a job." So, therefore, I just started small, and as I had the money, I kept growing and growing and growing. And that's what I've done with this one as well. As I had the money to reinvest in the business, and I had the time. So it was not an intentional choice, but it sure has been a fun ride.
It's so interesting how these businesses just evolve. There's so few of them that somebody sits down at the kitchen table and puts a plan together and says, "Let's start tomorrow." It's always an evolution from some form of needlework, and it just grows from there.
Don't you think that's true, though, with most of, for example, the designers of quilt patterns or of needlework or needlepoint? Very few of them start out as artists. Most of them start out as stitch lovers.
Yep.
And thread lovers. And then they don't find what they want. So they start looking for whatever it is that they're wanting. And pretty soon they have their own lines. And it's just an amazing evolution for most people.
Yeah. So, all right, so you buy up all these threads and with the intention of starting a wholesale business, or was that just part of your shop?
I don't have a shop. I have a wholesale business that runs out of my home.
At the time when you...
Oh, at the time? You know, you start with cross-stitch in the 70s and 80s was, in South Carolina, was a big deal.
It was a big deal everywhere.
It was, but particularly in South Carolina, because we had most of the big designers living like at Myrtle Beach in that area. So consequently, there was... Every time you went to the beach, you were bombarded by Gloria and Pat. And, I start mentioning names and you go, "Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah." And they all kind of lived in that area. They kind of fed off each other, too. So the needlework markets were in this area. And once you got a wholesale license, you can go to the needlework markets and then start shopping and spend all your money.
Yes.
Yeah. And then hopefully you have customers that are going to do exactly the same thing you've done.
It's an addiction. Everywhere it's an addiction. Yeah.
I said I sell crack to stitchers.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, if you feel when you feel and touch the threads, and you just can't put them down. Everything has a neat texture to it, and there's so much personal pleasure that comes from playing with them and seeing a design develop, or, you know, whether you're following a pattern or doing something on your own, totally.
This thread company, so you connect with them, and, I mean, they look to be beautiful threads all the way around. It's such a wide range of offerings.
Yeah, I mean, she was a customer, so she was buying raw material from us.
Okay.
We were sending it to Germany. She was dyeing it and sending it back. And she was looking for someone who would distribute in the United States, because at the time she had a pretty decent European market, particularly a German market, but not the rest of the world. And so I had the connections in needlework. I mean, some of them I hadn't talked to in 20 years, but I still had the basic connections. So it helped me to go to the quilt shows, the needlework shows, the embroidery, needlepoint, whatever kind of trade show there was, and talk to the store owners. Fortunately, most of them that I knew from over the years were still in business.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it was fun to get back into it, to tell you the honest to goodness truth.
And these threads are because I've seen them. I've seen bits of these lines at places. And my friends and I were, when we're at places, we're like, oh, look at these. Because the artist names like the Kladinsky and the Monet, you look at one and you're like, oh, it does. It looks like a Monet painting. It looks like the colors Klimt would use. And I didn't realize they came in such a wide variety. So like I've seen GIMP, I've seen maybe some of the silk ribbon, but mm-hmm. I didn't realize it comes in wool and cotton embroider and all the different textures, which as a needle pointer or even as a surface, doing surface embroidery, I'm thinking, oh, I see use for these.
Yeah, I mean, as a cross stitcher, I mean, or anything from anything that you put a needle and thread to, mm-hmm. these can be used for. Now, some of them obviously are kind of limited by size, but she has cotton, she has cotton, wool, silk, rayon, and then we also have the ground fibers fabric. So we have linen, 28 count linen, that's the Belgian linen. We have the 18 and 14 count needlepoint canvas that comes from Zweigart. Now, all of these threads for her are sourced in Europe. So we aren't using a Chinese market at all. So we have not had the downturn in product unavailability that a lot of the companies have faced. So everything comes from the European market as far as she's concerned, raw-wise. So she's able to get them fairly quickly. And in smaller batches most of the time, so she doesn't have to have so much money invested.
Yeah, going through your website, you start to see some of the names of threads, and I was thinking, oh, you're also selling, you know, DMC
yes.
And then I realized, no, you're not. That's the base thread that that is overdyed. Yeah.
That is correct. And overdyeing is probably not the right word, because these are prepared for dyeing, so they were never a base color of anything. They're pretty much a white or an off-white.
Oh, okay.
And they're all, they call it prepared for dyeing, so they actually do some treating so that the threads are just like they would be, like whatever DMC uses when they send it to their dye house to be dyed the solid color. And yes, the cottons all come from DMC. And the silks come from Auvergne-Soie. The metallics all come from Auvergne-Soie. So the companies that do business here, they do business here in the United States as well. They just don't bring every single product, because it's an American distributor for DMC. It's not DMC of France that is here. It's an American distributor.
Yeah. So then if you're starting with a base thread that is prepared for dyeing, then what you're offering through Threadnuts then must have characteristics that are different from conventional overdyes?
Well, most of the time, yes, because for one thing, most people do what they call space dyeing if it's variegated. In other words, it's a predictable color change. So particularly if it's done by a machine, the colors, they'll choose an inch and a half, 5 inches, whatever they choose as their color change. And it's shot out like an inkjet printer onto the thread. And when it gets to that point, it changes color. And ours are dyed in a totally different way. I've honestly never seen the dyeing. It's a secret that she will not share. But it's when she chooses the colors, it's a mix of colors. There's never two skeins exactly alike because she hand applies the color to the thread and the fabric. But it's never the same amount. All the same colors are used. So if let's say the Monet has, and is now called Claude M because someone trademarked the name Monet in Europe. So if you take that color and you think of his paintings, you think of the greens, there's some oranges, there's some yellows, there's some browns. So all of those colors are mixed in. As far as her dyes are concerned, she mixes all of them, not together in a batch, but applies them all separately. And then they're washed, so then they bleed together. So it's really interesting to see how it comes out. But when you stitch with it, it gives you a more organic look to your work.
Yes, I would say so. I would say so, because I've stitched with some of these threads, and the variegation is much, I don't want to say smoother. It's not big.
It's not predictable.
Right, right. And that makes it a lot more fun, especially like if you're doing a crazy quilt, or I belong to a group that does art quilts, and they're looking for something that's a little bit more organic when they're stitching. And these threads do that. And it's, like I said, sometimes they're hard to find these exact threads. When you're looking for them, you have to really, search around to find who's got them, where you can buy them.
we only have 40 colors. So even if you go into a store that has all 40 of them, it doesn't take up much space and you can easily walk past it.
Right, right.
So, and most stores, I have one customer that stocks all 50 products. I have a couple that come close, but very few stock everything that we make.
Right, because my guess is because they're like, if you're mainly a cross stitch store, you're not going to necessarily buy the snail trim. Because there's no reason for them to, they look at it and say, what are cross stitchers going to do with this?
In answer to your question, they do use it because they use it as a trim on the outside of ornaments.
Right. And it's fantastic. I love it. I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh, and I can see it on a needlepoint project.
Right. And a crazy quilt. Sometimes you can look at them and see them more readily. If you look at the pictures I sent you, there's one that has flowers that have little loops on it, and that is the single loop thread or trim that was just stitched down in rows.
Right.
So there's so many different ways to apply these that you're just, the only limitation is your imagination.
Right, right.
So because of the way they're dyed then, because, you know, I think of over dyes that I can take any over dye and I can manipulate it to keep dark to light, or select out a color in the range and use that. But these, I've not used your threads, but so these really, you can't do that. So you get a completely different look than you would with something that goes from dark to light to lighter in the dyeing process.
You're absolutely right. And that's why they're so unpredictable, even when I get them in or when I send them out to a store within what would typically be called the same dye lot, because they were all dyed in the same batch at the same time. There's lots of different ways that they're all put together. And so every skein looks different, and therefore every skein stitches different. However, if I take a skein that was produced 6 months ago and a skein produced today and stitch them, the colors are all there. They're just not the same amount in the same place. So does it blend? Yes. Does it match? No. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does. To me, that's opening doors that I would not have with standard overdyed floss.
And you're absolutely right. And therein lies the problem and the joy of working with these.
Right. Right.
Yeah, you know, there are some individuals that are so, they want everything to be matchy-matchy. They don't like change of any sort. And then there's freestyle stitchers, like I kind of am, that just go wild when I have this opportunity to work with them. So it's not a thread for everybody by any means. And it's never going to be sold in a big box store.
Well, that's right. Good.
Yeah.
This is
a local needlework shop. I mean, that's where I encourage people to shop the internet, because most of our local stores have an internet presence now after the pandemic. So many of them get a lot more customers online than they do actually physically come into their stores. So I urge people to go shop those kinds of stores. That I like the ones that you can get into and touch and feel it, because that makes a big difference, and see the color versus looking at it on a monitor. Because just because I've got 40 different colors, every single time I photograph them, they're going to look different.
Yeah.
And they're going to look different on your screen. So it's tough to sell one sometimes when you've got so many variables.
Well, but what this is suggesting to me, to go to a most basic scenario, if I have a cross-stitch scene where there might be some grass or some sky or some water, and I'm one of those who's willing to change the threads that are prescribed by the designer, then I might do well to have some of the thread nuts threads for water and use that, because that would give me a much different visual effect than I would with a solid or a conventional overdye then.
You are absolutely right.
Right.
Now that's you gave a couple of what ifs, and that is the customer who loves doing something different would be much better than the customer who is going to follow exactly.
Right.
And can't vary anything or can't see a change.
Yeah, and I keep on thinking of those big houses, and I think, if you're doing one of those in one of those colors that doesn't have a whole lot of variegation, those would be, to me, would be kind of boring to stitch. But stitching in one of the overdyed flosses you have, not overdyed, but the flosses, mm-hmm. I could see that being a lot of fun, and mixing a couple of them. So that you get the color you want, get the brick looking like bricks, yeah, or the siding of a house.
Yeah, for a cross stitching, you're absolutely right, and it is going to look more natural. I've done what most people would call a wrought iron gate, using one color, but it was really cool because that one color changed so often, and it looked more like a natural picture of a wrought iron gate.
Yeah. There was one just the other day, painted canvas people forever asking, what thread would you use or color for sky?
Mm-hmm.
And, everybody's got their favorite and their go-to whatevers. But this would give... just looking at the pictures, of the threads, this would give, in many ways, a more natural sky look. Oh, boy.
Well, and not just that, but you can use different textures or different sizes of thread. And so you can let your background show through. So right. Many times on a painted canvas, for example, they painted the sky blue, but I don't want it to look all one color blue. I want it to look like the sky. So if I use a thread that goes from light blue to dark blue and don't cover every single piece of fiber for my background, it's really cool. It makes it look more like clouds and sky and just the natural way it looks.
Right. And then the over-dyed metallics, too, if you yes. want sparkle in your water.
Yes.
Then it, right. It's already there. And you've got a variegation in it, too. So you're going to get even more movement and depth, I would guess.
You are absolutely right. Yep. You're getting the idea of what's cool about these and why I get so excited about them.
Yeah. Well, and I'm looking at the wool, the wool threads, because, you know, most of the wools I see are all, you know, they're all solids.
Yes.
But using some of these in doing crewel embroidery, I mean, how thick is that crewel wool?
It's a crewel wool size, a true, if you, like the thread that, are you familiar with Bellalusa?
That, yes.
That's what, it's the same size as Bellalusa.
Okay. Okay.
And at one time it was actually done on the Bellalusa, but that one became impossible for us to get.
Mm.
So she was able to find another source in Italy that does a very similar product.
Yeah. I mean, I could just really see, you know, just to play with a crewel design and using mm-hmm. some of these threads would just be, you know, for the leaves or for the flowers, I mean, or any a Jacobean design. Oh, yeah, I want all of them.
Well, yes. See, what this is saying to me, you know, how many times have we all gone into a store and just saw some threads that you like the colors and you buy four or five skeins of different ones? You have absolutely no need for them. No purpose in mind. You just want them. But
that's all of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I have stacks of those. But
yes.
But in this instance, there would be an actual purpose to making that kind of a purchase, because you would say, you know, these could be used for different effects no matter what the design or what the stitching technique. And so I should have these. And there may be an instance, where a blue replaced with a thread nuts thread would be a better option.
In my opinion, yes, that's the way I work. And honestly,
I knew you'd like the thinking.
Yes, yes, you got the idea. The problem is that unless you buy every single, I mean, I can go to my design, my walls of thread. You know, basically, I have everything set up like a retail store would, because that makes it easier for me to pull when I'm, you know, filling an order for a customer. So I can just go to the wall and say, ooh, that one. And it's not always the same spool. I mean, I may use the same color, but it may be a different texture or a different size or something else that I just like the spool. And it works. I'm using my design. I work from a design backwards most of the time. Although I do sometimes design for a particular thread, particularly if it's something new that's coming on the market and I want to show how it's being used, then I'm designing for that thread. But many times I'm working the other direction.
Okay.
I'm working with somebody else's design and then incorporating my product.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk about that, how you mark, I mean, this is such a unique niche for threads, how you market that. Is it through, do you do your own design work to demonstrate? Do you work with designers to use your threads to show it? How do you get examples out into the market so people can see what these do?
The word is yes to all of that. and it depends on... I mean, there's not enough hours in the day to work with individuals. I have several designers. I have crewel designers, for example, that do the things that you were talking about. I have quilt designers that do embroidery. I have wool applique designers that use a lot of these products. And when I find one that I can work, I mean, sometimes I can't work with them, but sometimes they come to me. And then we kind of pull it all together and work as a team. I've got one that's doing counted canvas, and she's one of the few teachers that does counted needlepoint canvas, that's doing some really amazing designs. There's just not enough hours in the day to do it all. And because I'm trying to sell through stores, I believe in the retail market personally. I want the stores to succeed because I really think that internet is wonderful if you know exactly what you want. And if you don't know exactly what you want, you need some help getting there sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's where the storefronts really come into play. And so I do most of my marketing to the wholesale versus the retail business.
Yeah, that because to go to your website, you know, obviously, not obviously, but you can certainly buy, any of us can certainly buy threads from you, but
yes.
But that's not your primary channel at all. It's wholesale to needlework stores.
Correct. Yes. Right. And okay. And I'm the North American importer, so I sell to stores in Canada and the U.S. I don't do any retail business in Canada or outside of the U.S. Retail is only inside the U.S.
Yeah.
But I do try to get people into their local retailer.
And these are threads I think that you need to almost to see it, because the colors are so different, you know, than what we're, and the threads are different. It's mm-hmm. That's why I'd love, it's like, oh, she has a wall of threads. I want to come see her house where her wall of threads is. Oh, maybe I should come visit you. No, yes. But there's something about that, you know, seeing the threads in person, and then it gives you, to me, it makes my mind start thinking of how to use them, because I normally don't buy threads for a purpose. I have them. So when I look through my stash and think, oh yeah, that'll work perfectly for this. But to be able to go to a store and see them would be fantastic.
And that's very true. If in a perfect world, every store would have walls of thread with all mine on it.
Do you guys look to constantly expand your offerings, or have you found kind of a happy level in terms of the colors and the thread types that you offer?
In answer to your question, there are always going to be some changes to product lines, because occasionally we get a fiber that we love and suddenly that source dries up. So we can't get the fiber anymore, or fortunately, pearl cotton, for example, and six-strand floss is made by a lot of different people. So there are a lot of sources to go through if one doesn't work out to get those kinds of threads. But the other things, like the metallics, our metallics have a totally different feel than the metallics made elsewhere. And if that source dried up, I don't know what we'd do. But, you know, that doesn't mean we couldn't get something else, but we're always looking for something new, something different, but we're cautious about how we do it because it's an expensive outlay.
Yeah.
And she is a family-owned business. It's she, her husband, and her son-in-law that run this business and do all of the work. And we're trying to grow sensibly. Because if you grow exponentially, you can't meet everybody's needs, and you can't gear up overnight to do some of these things. So we are growing. Every year we get more and more customers looking for and using and buying. And there, so far we haven't met, we haven't found the end, but at some point we may.
I doubt it. I doubt it. Those Averisois, is it Averisois Metallics?
Yes.
Yeah. We've had more than one person say how wonderful they are. What is it about them that, flexibility or what?
They feel like a thread. They don't feel like a metallic. And I think it's the raw material that they use to braid them, or to, most of them are braids. There's one that's 16 individual strands, of like working with 16 hairs at a time. But the others are a braid, and the braids just, they're flexible. They feel good in your hands. They don't fight you. They don't kink up when you're working with them. They're just lovely threads. That's all there is to it. And I don't know how they'd make it different. I've never been to Averisois, but that's how they make theirs.
Hmm. Seems, Beth, like we need to own some of that. You probably already do.
Yes. Actually, no, I don't, because, again, the stores I've been to, I've only seen, it's like they'll have, like I found the GIMP.
Mm-hmm.
And which
where are
is,
you? Where are you located, Beth?
I'm located in the Quad Cities area, and where I found the GIMP was in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Okay.
So it's not like it was. It's harder to find sometimes. This metallic braid that's variegated.
Mm-hmm.
I see so much potential in there because I like the sparkle. Oh yeah. yes, I could buy all the colors, but I've never seen that be over dyed like that.
Well, it's again, it, not every store carries every fiber.
Right.
The GIMP has been a fairly interesting sale because it has so many different applications. Before, you can stitch with it, you can couch it, you can braid it. So the Kumihimo braiders use it. The
quilters, oh, really?
The quilters use it. You can put it on the outside edge of your quilt as a piping by couching it down. There's just, you can make designs with it. There's just, it's just a cool thread because it's cotton on the inside and rayon wrapped on the outside. So it takes the dye beautifully. And
right.
It's got a neat texture to it too.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And it's fun to stitch, you know, and I couched it down as how I used it, and I really enjoyed mm-hmm. it. I haven't seen it. I guess that was the only place I saw it was at the Albuquerque shop.
Okay. And was that shop a needlepoint shop or a quilt shop?
It was the needlepoint shop.
Okay.
And I can't think of the name. It escapes me at this moment.
That's okay. They may or may not buy from me because I have distributors that sell to the needlepoint shops as well. So I don't know all the customers to get it. So
yeah.
It could be any, but it would be a fun place to go look. I've got stores all over the U.S. and Canada that sell these, but it's not a concentration. And by no means does everybody sell it,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
So does this all happen out of your home, or do you have a warehouse, or because at some point you got to store all this stuff.
Yeah, but it's a pretty small product.
Yeah.
I mean, a spool is not all that big. And so, yes, it is out of my home. I do have a dedicated office. I'm fortunate in that I had a second story that wasn't being used.
There
and it that second story has become my office. I outgrew the bedrooms and all on the first floor and the second story. I went, okay, I'm expanding. So, and I've still got more room. So if I need to, I can go further.
Oh, okay.
But it, at this point, I order every week, sometimes twice a week. And so we just get in, we're limited kind of on how much can come at one time without paying duties that are just outrageous. So we limit the size of the boxes and so forth. But we, the lady in Germany, the house, it's called House of Textile Arts, that does all the dyeing, and they're all called Painter's Threads. It's just my business. It's called Thread Nuts. The thread itself is called, all of them are called Painter's Threads because they were all named for those 30 different painters. And then the Painter's Pastels are the additional 10.
And supply, even through the pandemic, because of her sources, not really a problem, huh?
That's right. The only thing we've had any problem with is she had problem getting boxes because they came from Ukraine.
Oh.
And so there were some times that she had to find other alternate sources for those.
Hmm. Well, you win on that front. Wow.
We really did. And now that could change any moment, but as of right now, we don't have issue. Our biggest issue is the vacations that they take, you know, month long vacations in France.
Yeah.
And they shut the plant down.
Right.
You know, everybody's gone. So you have to plan for those things in the whole supply chain. And it's a challenge sometimes.
Yeah, I've never been able to wrap my head around that concept. I admire it, and I'm jealous that they can get away with it. But I used to edit a trade magazine for research scientists, and it was an international magazine, and I had to deal with that in the summer a lot, and that was back in the days before we had computers and email, and I had to, you know, I got caught a couple of times. And I had to start planning way, way ahead because they were leaving.
Yes. And they don't care who's waiting for something.
No, no.
You know, when the whistle blows at that day that vacation starts, they just get up from their desk and walk away. And it is a challenge. Fortunately, she understands it. I understand it. And I've been able to communicate that with most of my customers. And the summer is generally, for needlework, it's a lower sales time than it is. You know, you have your fall getting ready for, we start with Christmas in July. But the spring and the summer, I used to joke when I had a store that I needed to put in bedding plants because I wouldn't see customers as long as they could put in a garden.
Yeah. So talk about your design work. What do you do?
Most everything I design is designed to sell something.
Okay.
Which, if you think about what I do, that's about the only time I have to do anything. I don't get to do the fun. Well, I shouldn't say that. I still get to do the fun stuff, and I enjoy everything that I do. But it's... Yeah, generally it has a purpose that the ultimate goal is to show a customer, whether it be a wholesaler or a retail customer, how product can be used.
Yeah.
And how innovative.
And what techniques do you design?
I design on needlepoint. I design on quilting. In fact, virtually every photograph I sent you is my design.
Oh, okay.
Not,
wow.
There's one or two that are not, but the majority of them are.
Wow.
So they're just all kinds of different things.
Beth, the photos she sent are basically the ones that are in the gallery on the website.
Oh, okay.
So those are, oh man.
Well, I can't really use other people's work.
Right.
On the website, I have to use things that are mine. So yes, they are kind of duplicates of what you see on the website, but there are a couple of them that are not up there.
Yeah. Cause right. they're stunning. All of them. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So that means I get to ask you about, they're like flowers, like loop.
That's the one I was speaking of. That's a single loop trim, simply couched down in rows.
Oh, cause those are, those stop me every time I look through that gallery. Those stop me every time. Oh,
yeah. And I keep thinking, okay, you've got that painted canvas, Gary, of those birds.
Yep.
Okay, looking through her threads, I'm thinking, I need your canvas so I can pull threads, because I bet some of those would work spectacularly on that canvas.
Jane, that's best way of saying, Gary, you're not working on it. Send it to me and I'll fix it.
Believe me, I got that subtle hint right away.
Well, you said.
It sounds like you're losing it, Gary.
I know. This thing's already in the mail.
That's right. I'll get it done, Gary. I'll get it done. It's a Laura Birch canvas, too. So it's got all those bright colors and it has some gold in it. Couldn't you see some of those colors on there?
Yeah.
I mean, just lay it and couch on those long lines. I'm sorry. I need that canvas, Gary. Just I'll get it done. Send it back to you. I don't ever frame anything anyway.
I'm actually working on one of the Laurel Birch piece myself, but it's mostly flowers, just because it was fun to work on. And most of the ones that I do, I go to my local needle workshop and buy a canvas and then use my threads to make it like it's supposed to, like I think it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right.
I haven't seen what somebody else has done, but I do find, look, the metallics, if you think of peacocks, that's just a great, if you have a peacock to work on, the tail feathers done with those metallics is just out of this world.
The cross stitch ones, because so many of those samplers have those peacocks on them, those kind of stylized, they're just like circles sitting around, but think of those in one of those metallics instead of just doing it in cross, just the regular floss thread.
DMC floss, and you can use like a number 4 braid, or you could use the metallic twist, which is 16 strands, and treat it like a blending filament.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Wouldn't that make those so much fun? And you know the little girls who made those samplers, if they had a chance, they would do it. They would.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat. The ones
who, because if they're designers, they see it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some designers out there that are painters, or they're not stitchers. So they go at it from an artistic they come into it from art background, not from a stitching background. So it depends on who the designer is,
right,
as to whether they would see it or not. And then most of the time they just have, when they have a model stitched for markets or whatever, they let someone who's a good friend do the stitching on those. I wish I had lots of hours in the day so that I could do more, but I don't.
I know. Everybody needs to sleep and eat, you know, which is sometimes too bad. You know, I wish I didn't have to sometimes.
And so in my case, fill orders.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So Beth, this, you know, once again, we're doing a show here that's costing us money.
Yes.
But in our Not One More Thing thing, I think this falls under the we need to purchase some of these threads, because we need to do it for the good of the cause, as opposed to just,
That's right. We, you know, find a project that absolutely, you know, it's just screaming for one of these. And I think your canvas, I could see these threads all over it.
I guess I better get it in the mail.
either that or start buying some threads.
Right.
That's it, yeah. Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah, but and some of these, like the, you know, I'm looking at these braided flosses. You know, I could see doing like a herringbone with them on a crazy quilt, or wool appliqué is so popular right now. Some of these threads would be just the thicker ones. You don't have to just use, you know, a cotton floss or a pearl. Looking at
the crewel wool is gorgeous.
Yes.
And it blends with your design. So, you know, you're doing blanket stitch that doesn't jump. You know, there's times that you want the design to be the forefront, and there's times you want the thread on the ground, the outside, to be the forefront.
Right.
And you can make this blend so that it doesn't jump out at you if you use the wool. It just blends into whatever color you're using so beautifully. And then there's other times that you use a number 5 pearl cotton and it's going to jump.
Right.
So, I mean, it depends on what you want to do with it.
Right. Well, and there, you know, there's some designs that, you know, it's obviously the stitches that are screaming. So like you just have the circles going and then to use some of these just fun threads on it just to make those the stitches just pop. It would just be, oh yeah.
Yeah. 10 years ago, I was breaking arms of needle pointers to do different stitches and not just a tent stitch. And I dream of being able to get the cross stitchers to do the same thing.
Yes.
I don't know if that's going to be possible, but that's one of my dreams.
It's a tall order. That's a tall order.
Yeah. Yep, it is. I may not live long enough to see it happen. But I think it will eventually get there. I mean, the adding surface embroidered 20 years ago, we didn't think about doing any of that to quilts. And look at it now.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. It very much expanded in that yes. area.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's everything cycles in needlework. And you just kind of have to figure out where the cycle is going to be.
Yeah, I'm working on this cruel piece with wool right now. And now I got to go take a look. Yeah, I may have to have some other wools.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. We've just cost ourselves some money. Beth is in heaven because she's got all kinds of threads to deal with.
Yes, that's it.
Yep. So can we pretty much go to any local needlework store and say, hey, can you get thread nuts, threads, and they can get it?
The answer is yes.
Okay.
They can. The minimums for a store are very small. Once they're an established store, it's not like they have to buy thousands of dollars worth of inventory. And I did that for a reason, because I want them to be able to do exactly what you're talking about, where they have one customer that comes in and says, I'm looking for this. Can you get it for me?
Yeah.
And okay. I want them to be able to say, yes, I can get that for you. Because I want you to be my customer. I want you to come in here. I don't want you to go shopping somewhere else.
Right. Well, and the small quantities, that's a huge help to stores. Cause I've heard more than one store owner, you know, yeah, somebody came in for threads and I had to buy 14 skeins of it. And, you know, now what am I going to do with the other 12, you know?
And as a store owner, you don't want that.
Right.
Right. Right. You don't need that inventory to sit around.
Yes. And if it's dead inventory, it's not producing anything for you.
Right.
So having been a store owner was, I think, a big advantage going into this because I was able to do some things that make it easier for everybody else.
Yeah, because you have that understanding, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. We need to wrap up here, but I wanted to ask about I wanted to ask about silk ribbon. I find the whole silk ribbon world fascinating. Are you seeing more people doing that?
Yes, it's coming back again. It's one of those that cycled in the 70s and early 80s, and then it kind of waned away, and I'm seeing a resurgence in every aspect of, from quilting to embroidery, surface embroidery to needlepoint to cross stitch, another surface embellishment. So the stitches have not changed. We do a 2, a 4, a 7, and a 13 millimeter silk ribbon. So your possibilities are endless there. I mean, except for the fact that I don't have black and white.
Right. And it looks like you're getting there. She's gonna, you're trying to get the Soie de Paris and the Soie 103 in. Is that going to be a new product or?
No, I actually have them in stock. They're just not shown on the website yet.
Oh, you have those.
Calm down, yes. Beth. Calm down. Easy, Beth. Easy.
So like, let's say I wanted, cause I like the color that the colorways that Klimt comes in. If I could order that.
Yes.
Oh, that's bad. I didn't need to know that.
Yes. I have Swab 103. I have Swab Surfine. I have Swab Evol. Now, the Swab Evol is a special order because I have only maybe two customers that ever buy it because it's such a specialty thread.
Do you have Swab Gobelin?
Uh-huh. I have Swab Gobelins. I have Swab Perlet. I have one called Swab American that's the equivalent of a size 8 pearl cotton, whereas Swab Perlet is a 12 and Swab Gobelin is a 16.
This is bad. Why did you tell me that? This is very bad. Okay.
Yeah, I thought this was something coming up, but oh boy.
Yeah. Oh no. And we're working on projects with the Swab Gobelin right now, and I love it. Paris and the Swab Perlet. I've used them all, and they're beautiful threads. But to get one that's over dyed,
yes.
Oh, that's bad. That is just so bad. I might be ripping out a project and starting it again.
Oh, well, don't do that. There's too much work involved. Do something new.
So I pick something new, but I have enough new projects.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Plus you've got Gary's canvas to work on.
No, that's right. When you mail it to me, then that's right. That's right. I'll just wait till he mails that to me, and I'll threads I need.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. This is costing me on all fronts. I think we'll wrap it up right here before it gets worse.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love talking with you all today, and I really love the fact that you get it. Yeah. You understand the concept because it's a very different concept than what's the threads that are sold, you know, in general by the big box stores, by the independent retailers. They still sell a heck of a lot of DMC.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So but this is different.
It is different. And it gives you a lot more opportunities to make the needlework your own. To really play with it, which is fantastic.
So I really do appreciate you offering me the opportunity of explaining it to you and to everybody that listens as to why they're so different.
Yeah, we appreciate it too. Now we've started a little fire here. This is going to be trouble.
Yes, this is going to be trouble. This is going to be big trouble.
So you want to just put your credit card on file here?
Yes, I think I might have to.
It's going to be the easy way. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right, Jane Garrison, Threadnuts, threadnuts.com. Jane, thanks so much. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Beth. Bye.
All right. Bye.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.